Welcome to What in the Smut podcast,
where the books are horny and so are we. I'm Elle.
And I'm Kay. So, we're warm again, but what's been going on in the Smutverse this week?
It has been a hellscape of both snow and ice. While many across the nation stepped outside into the sub-zero temperatures to stand up to ice, the new mayor of New York City urged residents to stay inside and off the roads as the city received a foot of snow. Quote, "I can think of no better excuse for New Yorkers to stay home, take a long nap, or take advantage of our public library's offer of free access to heated rivalry for anyone with a library card," said Zohran Mamdani. This unexpected endorsement from the mayor caused the downloads of the second book in Rachel Reed's Game Changers series to surge by 529%.
I love that.
I know. Mamdani reads smut. Let's go.
Fantastic.
Mamdani, for his part, did not stay inside and instead was spotted all over New York City, helping dig people out, overseeing the shift change for the snowplows, and even popping into Zoom classes to reiterate his offer to New York children to pelt him in the face with a snowball if they see him around town.
Sick. I have to say, I hate being cold and I like snow from afar. It's beautiful. But when I had to go and shovel out my car from the 24 inches that I got of snow, it did give me a little hope for humanity as I had neighbors helping me and I was helping to brush off other people's cars. We were working together and it definitely gave me a little bit of okay, the world will be all right.
Yeah.
We hope.
We hope. Now, Mamdani is digging up my long-dead hope that politicians can make a difference. But our main character this week may have been buried a little prematurely. Okay?
So this week, we read a brand new release, Valentine's Slay by Nevessa Allen. And the synopsis says, "Roses are red, violets are blue. Emma's not dead, and her gravedigger's hot, too." This Valentine's Day love claws its way out of the grave in number one New York Times bestselling author Nevessa Allen's steamy and hilariously dark rom-com. Louisiana gravedigger Noah Evans's Valentine's night shift takes an unexpected turn when his high school crush starts screaming from her freshly dug grave. Whoever tried to bury Emma 6 feet under is in for a nasty surprise. They should have checked for a pulse because she's got unfinished business, starting with the hot gravedigger who just saved her life. As they unearth a deadly family conspiracy, Noah and Emma discover that old flames burn even hotter the second time around, especially when someone's trying to kill them. Nevessa Allen's Valentine's Slay is part of the improbable meet-cute Second Chances stories for star-crossed lovers and hopeless romantics. It can be read or listened to in one sitting. This was another one of those Amazon kind of group project releases.
I love that we keep calling them group projects.
And
it's
kind of
like an anthology, but they're not published together.
Yeah, and they're not a group project.
No.
Sorry.
You don't.
This is a lot darker than some
I'm
of the
shocked.
Other, which is her whole
I'm shocked
shtick.
That the author of Lights Out wrote a dark romance.
I actually haven't read Lights Out, and I
haven't
need to.
Either, and ooh, I also okay. need to.
But yeah, no, it was saying the other ones were very sweet and kind of cozy, and this was a lot darker. And it wasn't dark for the first 3/4 of it, really.
Yeah.
Not super dark. And then it was again.
And then it was. it was there were dark themes, but it wasn't dark on the page until right there at the end.
Yes. Now, where would you put this one on our scale?
One. Nothing particularly kinky. We've got two humans. I don't know. All of the spice of it is just that it feels a little taboo, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like it could have been a 2 if they had sex in the coffin or something, but otherwise.
Yeah, or in the graveyard, But no, just.
Which is funny because this one, based on the group of them, had the highest spice rating.
Yeah.
This had 4 chili peppers. Now, the smut does smut.
It does, absolutely.
But in terms of our scale, there's nothing really too out of the ordinary or kinky or any of that.
No. Good stuff. No. It's very straightforward. It's delightful, but it's not, as we've often stated, our smut scale starts at Open Door.
Yes. Absolutely.
And I think the smut scale for the Improbable Meet Cute Second Chances series definitely does not.
Yeah. There was one of those that was a half a chili pepper, and that was sweet romance with witty banter. And then this one was explicit dark romance.
Yes.
So I kind of like that too, because it's giving everyone an opportunity to be part of this group project.
Bring all levels of spice and are welcome.
Yeah.
It's like a potluck. It's like a potluck.
That's true. Because in a potluck, you're going to get something that's delicious. But sometimes there's going to be somebody that brings like something gross.
Yeah.
Or just really bad.
I'm telling you. Group project implies that everyone works together to produce one outcome, whereas potluck is like everyone brings their own flavors to the table.
That's fair. All right. We can call this the Amazon potluck.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my arguments into consideration.
I don't think that in terms of triggers, there's too much sexually.
No, there are plenty of triggers outside of the sex.
Yeah.
There weren't any trigger warnings at the start of the book, I don't think.
No, though. Which is crazy to me because this
it
one
is.
Well, see, here's the thing. If you go into this knowing that you're going to read a Neves Allen book, you're like, okay,
true.
I know that it's going to be something dark. But like, because this was with a group of other some kind of just sweet romances, there, I feel like there should have been trigger warnings. There was a skull on the cover.
I mean, there is that.
But being buried alive.
Absolutely my nightmare.
Yeah, same.
Buried alive. Your husband tries to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Corruption. And then just like a very violent death on the page.
Yeah, I agree. But otherwise, yeah, that pretty much covers it.
Yeah. I will be curious as we go through it, but I think we spend more pages on the scuffle at the end that eventually kills somebody than we do on the spice.
That might be true.
It was really long.
Yeah, that's a good point. So despite the fact that this has only been out for, at the time of recording, about a week, there's a 4.1 on Amazon and a 3.7 on Goodreads, and Amazon already had like almost 2,000 reviews. So good
Neves
for
Allen.
You, Neves Allen. Get that bag, because fantastic. 5-star on Amazon, and I pulled this one just for you, says Cats.
Good.
Cats. Nevessa has a way of pulling you completely into her worlds. Her prose feels vivid and immersive, like you're not just reading the story, but living inside it. And the cats? Always a delightful bonus. They add that extra layer of charm and personality that makes her stories even more memorable. Now, I haven't read any of her other books, but I'm assuming
now
that
I need
there's
to.
Cats in most of them. The acknowledgments at the end do acknowledge her two cats that she personally has. So, and a 3-star from Amazon just says slay. 3.5, I wish we could give 0.5 stars. A spicy novella. I get everyone handles trauma differently, but the same night, that's what you want to do. I guess you do you, hun. I mean, she really wanted to feel alive after what she went through. Go for it. I probably would have waited until at least morning.
Yeah.
I kind of had these thoughts as well.
I did as well. 4.75 stars on Goodreads says, this book absolutely did not take the direction that I thought it was going to, but I absolutely loved it. We love to see shitty men get their just desserts.
Mood.
And then finally, a 1-star on Goodreads just says, pardon? I like that.
So did I. As always, if you want to give Nevessa Allen her page reads, this one actually is also, you can do the audio. It's on Kindle Unlimited, but you can do the audio through Audible also for free. So if you want to give her page reads or listens, the link for that will be in our show notes. But otherwise, we're going to go through the full plot. There will be spoilers, and let's get into it.
Let's. I was amused that we only got Noah's perspective
yes.
the entire story until the very, very, very end, until like the epilogue.
I agree. When I was looking at the chapters, it's like I was kind of intrigued to see like how's that gonna go with just
yeah.
his perspective. It's interesting.
It is. It is interesting because I think I'm always curious to see how a romance writer is going to, especially a woman. Mm-hmm. Specifically a woman, how a woman is going to portray her main male character and his inner monologue when we see it. And like, I found him very believable.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot. He had enough, how do I say this? There was enough of him being horny and then trying to talk himself out of being horny that it felt like a realistic portrayal of a man.
I'm trying to be a good guy, but yeah. like my hormones can only take so much. Absolutely. I was thinking yeah. the same thing.
So we do start with Noah. We start with Noah in the cemetery, and it says someone was moaning in a cemetery at night. And this really spoke to me because this I feel like absolutely has to be the reality of the situation because it says most normal people would have been freaked out by that, but I was more annoyed than anything else because some people like to come get freaky in the graveyard and this is a normal occurrence. And of course, it's Valentine's Day. And so he's making the assumption that this is a secret tryst in the graveyard.
Yes. So he gets closer to where this groaning and moaning is coming from. And he's like, I gotta get rid of these people before I like finish my shift for the day. And also this speaks to, I feel like, a lot of people that do those kind of what may be considered undesirable jobs, like
yeah.
working in a graveyard or working at a funeral home or something that may be like a little spooky. They're always like, ugh, man, like this is I've.
Yeah, of course, you're fetishizing death. I've had a long ass day. Can we please move on?
So he's thinking about how, like, her husband, the one Emma that he just buried that morning, her husband was kind of a dick. Mm-hmm. He was a doctor and his family owned the hospital. And it was kind of the worst kept secret in town that he was cheating on his wife all the time and all of this. So, like, we automatically hate him.
Uh-huh. I mean, it doesn't take much to get you and I to hate a fictional man in general.
That's excellent
point. A man in general.
Excellent point. You wrong me or one of my friends or one of my fictional characters, you're dead to me.
Correct. Absolutely. But Nevessa Allen does do a very good job of making him so hateable in such a short period of time.
Agreed.
Like, I don't think we get dialogue from him until the very, very end, but we don't need it.
I don't want to hear a word that comes out of that man's mouth.
Absolutely not. Because the words that come out of his mouth are fucking lies, this gaslighting son of a bitch.
Yeah. So we do also get that there is about to be two comets, star-crossed lovers that are about to cross paths on Valentine's Day.
The media had romanticized the event because it was these two comets had gone by in the 80s but had missed each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is their second chance.
Yes, which again, this is a whole series of second chance romances, which
yes.
I love a second chance romance.
Yeah, yeah.
I do. I love a second chance romance and I like probably give men of my past too much grace in that.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And see, second chance is not my favorite because the men of my past can rot in hell as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. Hopeless romantic over here. Very, very practical over there.
They don't change, Kay.
I know.
They do not. They get older, but they never grow up.
It's true. So we get Noah yelling, "That better not be you again, Cash Andrews." Apparently, the lead singer of a local rock band likes to fuck in the cemetery.
Love this. There's just enough like little details to make it feel like a small town. You know,
yeah.
like there's like enough mentions of like people and places that it's just like, yep, you believe firmly that this is a man who grew up in this town and is used to dealing with the other locals.
Yes.
And it works. It's very well done.
It was very well done. So the screaming and moaning stops for a minute, and then he gets an ear-piercing scream throughout the cemetery.
Yes.
And he's like, that is not a sex scream. That is
no.
Terrified, a little bit muffled. Uh-huh. And the kind of scream you heard in horror movies and serial killer documentaries, the kind of scream you run from if you're smart. Unfortunately, uh-huh. I'd never been the brightest bulb in the box.
I love it so much.
I did too.
We also get a little interesting tidbits about him because he's like, it sounds like a woman and there's no way in hell I was leaving her out here. My mama would tan my adult ass if she found out, and my conscience would never let me live it down. At least I was a big son of a bitch, tall, broad from long days of manual labor. If I knew anything about the kind of men who preyed on women, it was that they were all fucking cowards. So I was hoping I'd be able to scare them off without too much trouble.
We also learn that he is tall as in the standard Roman.
6'4".
6'4".
Yep.
So he follows the sounds of the screaming to a tree and stops when it feels like he's like right on top of it. And he looks at the mm-hmm. gravestone and it says mm-hmm. Emma Broadturn, mm-hmm. which is who he just buried this morning and who he had a crush on all through high school.
It sounded like I was standing right on top of her because I was. I craned my head down in slow motion. The screams were coming from Emma's grave.
Crazy.
My nightmare.
Yeah, same. So then he's like, I must have fallen asleep. I have been so exhausted. I must be hallucinating. There's no way that this has happened.
Yep.
I was half terrified that her shadowy, transparent figure was about to float toward me out of the darkness, or worse, that her hands would punch out of the ground, but I saw mm-hmm. nothing. So then he hears her scream, help me. And he's like, I'm here. Emma, is that you? And she says, yes. Where am I?
Yeah. And it's like, he cringed. Nope, not shouting 6 feet under the ground in a coffin back at her because she already sounded like she was in a blind panic. You're stuck, I yelled back, but I'm going to get you out.
And then she says, who are you? And he says, Noah Evans. I need you to try and stay calm, okay? And she goes, Noah Evans, the gravedigger? Is this a coffin? Oh my God, let me out. I mean, it was well done. Like, that's yeah. how she goes from appearing dead to... Mm-hmm. being able to piece together that quickly, like, I know your name. I know what you do. Oh, my God. This is where I am right now.
Yeah.
Is a little wild.
Well, yeah.
But
I mean, we're not going to focus too much on.
No, as much as we typically like to uncover as much of a plot hole as we can. This is.
Let's just accept from the very beginning that, like, this is very unrealistic.
Medically.
Yeah.
Not mm-mm. the way that things go. But mm-mm. I'll take it. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I need to go get the excavator.
Yeah.
If I try to dig you out with a shovel, it's going to take forever. And he's thinking, like, there's only so much air in a coffin mm-hmm. which I don't quite understand. Like, I've heard that before.
Yeah. Like, you'll run out of oxygen. Is the issue. And so depending on how much you're breathing, if you're asleep, you consume less oxygen because your body requires less because you're basically in, you know, a shutdown state. But if you are awake and hyperventilating, you're turning all of that oxygen, whatever is there, into carbon dioxide. So you will eventually suffocate because you will still be breathing. Oxygen. There will still be air. It's just that the content will have slowly tipped towards carbon dioxide, which you cannot use.
But I guess my whole thing is, like, how sealed are these coffins? It was a fresh grave, right? So, like, it's not like yeah. they're doing 1 foot of dirt back into it, tamping it down another foot. Maybe they are, but I like for the purposes
no, I
of
mean,
this,
like
I don't think so. So
it's,
like,
it's not like it's like hard packed dirt necessarily.
Right. So like there's air in there. So I guess my question is, like, how airtight sealed are these coffins? Because if it is airtight, then they shouldn't be able to hear her screaming.
It's not going to, yeah. I mean, it's not going to be like fully airtight, but it doesn't really matter because like you can asphyxiate inside a car, for example.
That's true.
Like, and a car does not, is not airtight. Like that's kind of the whole thing.
Okay.
Like if you sleep in your car overnight, you're supposed to crack the window because you could asphyxiate.
Huh. I didn't realize that that was the reason why. For some reason, I just always thought that it was like if your car was on, there was a chance that like the exhaust could get blocked or whatever. And that would be why. But that.
Because you'll use all the oxygen on the inside.
You're so much smarter than me.
I just have a lot more random knowledge. And a lot of it's useless.
I'll pull out a random animal fact any day, but you bring this stuff that actually is like, oh, okay, so if I sleep in my car, I should crack the window.
Do tell Meanwhile, me what's your favorite random animal fact right now.
My new favorite animal fact is that tapeworms are hermaphroditic and that they duel with their penises, and whoever loses gets pregnant.
Kay told me this before we started recording, and frankly, I'm still baffled by this information, and I don't know what to do with it. So now you all have to hear it, too.
Also, there's this YouTube series called Green Porno.
Okay.
But it's this woman with, like, a French accent, and she dresses up like there's one on snails, there's one on a praying mantis, and she dresses up like the animal and then kind of goes through their mating rituals and like.
Incredible.
Yeah. So like snails.
You have to include a link to it in our show notes because no one else wants to Google it, but everyone else wants to see it.
There's like praying mantis, there's a spider, there's like all sorts of.
I think
it's through like Sundance, but it's a YouTube. It's pretty outrageous.
Fantastic. Anyway, getting back on topic.
So he runs over to the shed to get the excavator and comes back driving across graves.
Yeah.
So he says to her, I'm going to start digging out as carefully as I can, but I need you to scream real loud if the coffin cracks or buckles. And he goes, I'm good with the bucket, Emma. I won't hurt you, which is nice of him to say, but also like, that's a scary promise to make.
And she says, you promise? And he goes, I promise. And then thinks, please, universe, don't make a liar out of me now. Like, I'm pretty good with an excavator. And like,
you are?
Yeah.
Why have you used an excavator?
Well, like, with a backhoe. It's basically a backhoe.
Yeah. Again, why have you used a backhoe?
I grew up in the middle of nowhere. My dad got a backhoe on the back of our like big ass tractor. I think I was like 10 or 11 and I made it my mission to be really good at it.
Are you really good at the claw machine games?
No, claw machine games are rigged.
I knew you were going to say that. So he keeps digging and then kind of like stopping, cutting the engine, making sure she's still in there and still alive because he's starting to stress out that she's going to run out of oxygen.
Right. Because she's hyperventilating because she's trapped. This is the best thing you can do is like calm down. Like, I know it's hard. I know it would be fucking hard, yeah, but like. Nope. The more you scream and the more you freak out.
The best thing you can do is just pass out.
Yes, this is true.
So he goes, you got to calm down. She goes, you calm down.
Yeah.
And he says, don't be rude or I'll leave you where you are. They do have some good banter, which you know I love a good banter.
I was surprised because it felt reasonable.
Yeah.
He makes mention of his like dark humor because he works in a graveyard and like that's just kind of at where he grew up and how you cope, and she responds well to it also, and it really worked for me. I really liked it.
I mean, it's nice to find somebody that you like get like that, you know.
Yeah.
Or like that, even though that he's got some dark humor, that she just kind of takes it with in stride,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. He says, oh, come on now. You got to hear me up here sweating my ass off trying to get you out. And she replies, all I hear is your big feet stomping around. If you crush me, I swear to God, I'll haunt you.
It was all very good.
Yeah.
And for the fact that it was a dark romance, like, and I think that this is how she, from what I understand about her other books, is kind of how she writes. even yeah. with her dark romance, she's got some like sarcastic kind of snarky characters in there, which yeah. I love.
And what's interesting too is like I would almost argue.
What? You argue?
Okay, that's fair. I walked into that one. Yes, in fact, I would. I would argue that this is not a dark romance.
Yeah, it's really not until the end.
And it's not even like the thing about dark romance, like this is like a romantic thriller.
Yeah.
Like the thing about dark romance is like usually you have taboo shit that like the main characters are engaging in with each other. Like one yeah. of them's a stalker. One of them's a serial killer. Like one of them broke into our house. Like, you know, like there's usually when you talk about dark romance, you're playing with that yeah. line. Not so much like there's someone else who's trying to kill me or you or us. Like that I feel like is less of a dark romance and more like this is a romantic thriller.
Yeah. It's like a rom-com with murder.
Yeah. Yes. That is exactly what this is.
So he gets her like the coffin all dug out and then tells her, I'll get you out. And then I'll call 911. And she's like, no, absolutely not. You can't do that. Basically because Beau's brother is the mm-hmm. sheriff.
Yep.
And she's like, we can't call 911 because then Beau will find out I'm alive and he's going to try to finish me off. So she's yep. already also come to the conclusion that he's trying to kill her.
Yes. And well, because she remembers the confrontation.
She remembers the confrontation and we'll learn more about what happened to get to the point where she is now being dug up from a coffin.
Indeed, yes.
So he gets her out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he opens it up and she kind of slips in the coffin on the silk liner and he grabs her without thinking. She throws her arms around his neck and then he mm-hmm. tries to pull her out and she's like, no, I'm too heavy.
This is a bit much, I think. She wants to continue hiding. She needs to figure out what her next move is. And he's like, okay, like you can come to my place, but we need to put this grave back together if you're going to continue pretending to be dead. And she's like, I don't want to be alone. And he's like, it's okay. I'll call my dad.
And which, like, man, to have, like, that's close family. He's going to call his dad and his dad's going to be like, you want me to put a grave back together? No yep. questions asked.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk about yep. ride or die in the yeah. cemetery industry.
Totally. So they like settle on that. He's going to call his dad and he goes, I'm going to help you up now. Let me know if anything hurts. And then she goes, no, I'm too heavy.
Mm.
And he thinks, was she a curvy goddess? Yes. Could I still bench press her? Also, yes.
Love that. Love it.
A girl wants to feel small.
A girl just wants to feel small.
And of course, like her husband had been talking shit about her weight. So.
Yes. I mean, so she's got a little bit of a, she's very complex. self-conscious and she's got a little bit of a complex because of her gaslighting asshole. I mean, can we call him an ex-husband? Because
technically not
it's
yet.
Till death do us part. He buried her already.
True. No. I'm sorry.
Okay. Logistics.
They are still married.
So he gets her up and instead of making her walk back over to the shed or whatever, he puts her on his lap mm-hmm. in the excavator. Says, high school Noah would have lost his mind over it, but adult Noah was still too concerned about Emma's welfare to appreciate having such a gorgeous woman wrapped around me. It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like he's still just thinking about it and just trying to be like, oh, no, I need to not be popping a boner on this excavator right now because I just dug her up out of a grave. Right?
True. Yeah. Yep. I completely agree. So Emma starts to explain kind of like what happened. And she goes, I remember hearing another rumor about Beau cheating on me. And I think I snapped or something. I went into his home office and pried open all the locked desk drawers, trying to find proof so he couldn't lie to me this time. Instead, I found a bunch of unpaid bills and a pile of late notices for our mortgage and cars. And she like keeps digging and goes back through their payment history and discovers that they've been living well outside of their means for years. Mm. And Noah's like, how the fuck? Because like Beau's inheritance, and he's like, he's from a rich, rich family, and he's a doctor at a hospital. Like, he should have like plenty of money. And she's like, I wanted to know the same thing.
And we don't really get an answer.
No, we don't. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. Although I feel like that can happen with doctors or lawyers or whatever, these high-paying jobs that you think like, oh, they've got this big fancy house, they must be. But also mm-hmm. a lot of times it's like they also have $200,000 in school loans and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem to be the case. So like all of the typical boxes that you would think to get to that point don't really add up.
Yeah. But she waited for him to come home and confronted him. And the last memory I have is us fighting at the top of the stairs. And I think he pushed me down them. So she's kind of like having a moment. And Noah says, I have you. It's okay to let go. Which like gives her that permission, just kind of like sob it out. Which is like,
we love a man that is not afraid of some tears.
Fuck yes.
Sometimes you just gotta let it out. Sometimes you just gotta cry, especially if you've been buried alive.
Yes. He like holds her through it. It says, I rubbed my hands over her back, making soothing noises, my eyes searching the grounds as I drove, because her story had turned me paranoid. And I was worried Beau might suddenly show up to, I don't know, check on the grave or something, make sure his work was complete. Murderers were always doing shit like that in crime documentaries. And this spoke to me.
It spoke to me too, because I feel like I pretty much live my life in a state of paranoia.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I'm always ready for the murderer to pop back up. Like,
Correct. Noah calls his dad. Mm-hmm. And his dad says, you headed over here for dinner? And Noah replies, no, Dad, Emma's alive. And then his dad hangs up on him.
Like, why? So here's the thing. I think I kind of skipped over just a sentence which changed my perspective on things.
Yeah.
When I reread it, because it says, I called him back yelling, don't hang up, when he answered. And this time, and I skipped over, he listened while I got the whole story out, because
I did too.
I just heard like, don't hang up. And then he goes, you're not messing with me.
Yeah.
And Emma says, he's not. And Dad swore, I'll walk over now. Don't worry, I won't tell anyone. So at first I was like, holy shit, they've done this before.
Yeah. I also missed it the first time.
And then I reread and I was like, oh, no, he did tell him the whole story.
Yep.
But again, it's one of those like when you don't see some of that dialogue.
Yeah.
Although I guess for this, it would have been like the same dialogue that we kind of just got. So like it makes sense, but it could change things pretty drastically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is true.
Then he's like, okay, I'm going to take you back to my cottage, to Emma, and we'll get you cleaned up. We'll figure out what we want to do from there. Because she's like, I need to be hidden. If he finds out I'm still alive, he's going to try to finish the job. I need to stay hidden. And he's like, okay, but we're going to take the back roads. But if we pass anybody, you need to hide, because his car is very well known and he has not been dating anyone. And again, small town rumors fly real fast.
Yep, exactly. So she then asks what happened, and he explains kind of that her husband shepherded her through the whole process and didn't let anybody else in. He got her brought right over to the hospital without telling anyone there'd even been an accident. He didn't tell her parents. Her parents found out from his brother, who accidentally let it slip that she was in a coma. And then her parents tried to see her, but Beau said she was in too critical a condition for visitors. He was both her medical power of attorney, her husband, and a doctor. So like everyone like was just shut out of the process. And her dad tried to file a conflict of interest complaint with the hospital, but Beau's dad is the head of the hospital and he declined it. So not only is her husband a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And his family, like, very, very powerful. But they're, like,
also
complicit.
Pieces of shit.
Yes. Yeah. Complicit in this.
Which we will get down the road.
True.
They'll get theirs also.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like, one of those things that it sounds like, man, this guy had way too much control. And, like, that's really shitty. And I can't believe that that is something that is allowed to have happened. Mm-hmm. But it does happen.
It does. It absolutely
like,
happens.
Pretty regularly.
Well, pretty regularly.
In the real world.
And also, like, in normal course of accidents, when it actually is an accident.
It's true.
This happens.
But I'm just thinking about, like, the husband, the wife is, the parents want to come see, or family, extended family wants to come see, and they're like, no, 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 this is...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yes. So the final kind of nail in the coffin, if you will, for Emma, is that Noah tells her that Beau didn't give her parents a chance to say goodbye before he pulled the plug. And she says, I'm going to fucking kill him. And he replies, not to toot my own horn, but I am pretty good at disposing of bodies.
Like that, like he's joking and she's like, be careful about what you're going to say to me right now because I may very well take you up on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice little addition.
Yeah.
She goes, do you know, I think he might have been trying to kill me for months.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get a story about how their marriage was not going well. There were all the rumors about cheating, but he also hadn't been touching her.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, had been saying that she was starting to gain weight. Mm-hmm. And then she wasn't feeling well. And she was having symptoms that were strange symptoms. He was saying that it must be some kind of autoimmune thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then he had gone away for a week and she started to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very much the, like, you know, pouring poison into the soup to keep her sick kind of situation.
Absolutely. But it's also one of those things where it was very easy for her to attribute it to the stress of their marriage because similarly, if the source of your stress was out of town, you might start to feel better. And then when they come back, and then you feel less good again. But she goes on to tell Noah about how he hadn't touched her in months and how he had opinions about her weight. And she goes, oh, Jesus, I can't believe I just said that. I'm so sorry. We haven't spoken since high school. And here I am oversharing about my sex life.
This, I felt this. Yeah. I have the same problem with, like, oversharing and being like, we're not that close. I'm sorry. I just gave you all of that information.
Well, and what was funny is, because I feel like we are guilty of this to each other.
Yeah.
Noah replies, we've trauma bonded. The normal bounds of conversation no longer apply.
Same.
Grateful for you.
Yes, there's no such thing as TMI. I want more. I want all of the information. There's no such thing as too much. I'm going to ask you details you don't even want to share.
Mm-hmm. Likewise.
So he goes, Beau's a fucking bastard. He should have been the one begging you. Christ, didn't he realize what he had? And this is just so sweet.
It is so
sweet.
She's
like, do you really mean that? And he says, you're the most beautiful woman in the Tri-County area, which is like so small town.
Yeah.
And if a man doesn't make you feel like that every second of your life, then they don't deserve to even stand in your presence. And I'm not just talking about your appearance. You've got a beautiful soul too, Emma Miller.
He calls her by her maiden name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she says, you know what's crazy? And he's like... well, she says, I literally just crawled out of a coffin and I feel better than I have in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
Which some of that is the trauma bond.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny, too, because, like, I think narratively, the purpose that this serves is to ensure that we, the reader, are on board with the sexy times that are going to happen imminently.
That's true.
Like, there's, we never get like an explanation for why she feels so good despite having just come out of a coma.
Yeah.
Like, we could speculate, like, maybe the poison finally worked its way out of her system, but like, he threw her down the stairs. Which was enough to knock her out.
And this is about a week and a half ago is what it comes down to. Like, it wasn't like she's been in a coma for 3 months. It was like...
No. No, this woman is still very injured.
I also wonder then, is it because she hasn't been on this, like, medically induced coma medication for months that it is more easily worked out of her system?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, the digestive system moves pretty fast. It's about 24 hours. So, like.
But then I also think that sends me down a spiral of digestive system and death and things. It just sounds messy. Coffins. I mean, and.
Yeah, there is that. I would have expected, I don't know, her liver must be just fucking destroyed after all.
Well, and
that.
We do get some of that information actually also
after the fact. Yeah, you're right. But yeah, so we kind of like speculate why she feels so good. Noah jokes that she's a vampire now, and then they kind of get to, do you think Bo might have medically induced your coma or something? And then kind of Noah puts the pieces together and thinks, like, what if all that control and coercion and holding, keeping everyone else at bay was so that no one was there to witness him administering drugs? Like, if, like, he could just easily keep you out, keep you unconscious until you were buried, where you'd just quietly suffocate to death in your sleep. The fact that you managed to stay alive for at least 8 hours is a goddamn miracle. So they go back to his cabin, and it kind of gives a nod to his ex, Mizzy. We've heard of her already because it's a small town. So if someone saw him driving around, mm-hmm. It had been at least 6 months since he and Maisie had broken up. And his cabin is designed nicely because Maisie did all like the home decor, which realistic.
Yeah.
Funny.
I mean, 9 times out of 10, if a single man has a nicely decorated home, those touches were typically put there by a woman, whether that be an ex or their mother.
Or a interior designer that he paid.
That's true. More often than not, it's the first two, though.
You're right. I was just allowing for the benefit of the doubt.
So she is like, oh, it's nice in here. And he's like, you sound surprised. And she goes, oh, sorry. No, I meant. And then she's like, yeah, I am surprised. I expected a lot more plaid and animal heads mounted on the walls. It doesn't even smell bad in here. Very impressive. And he says, wow, the bar is in hell.
Which made me think of you.
Ain't it the truth? And she says, it really is. In my defense, all I hear from my unmarried friends are dating horror stories. You wouldn't believe how many single men in this town put their mattresses right on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He says, not even on a box spring?
And she goes, nope. And he replies, heathens.
I love their conversations. I love the banter.
Me too.
It's very, like, despite the fact that she just had a very traumatic incident, and so did he, for that matter.
To be fair, yes. Yes, that would be very traumatic.
So he's like, okay, I'll get you some clothes. You can borrow some clothes. We'll get you a nice warm shower, get you all cleaned up, because they're both covered in dirt. And she's like, please don't leave me, because he was going to go downstairs and make something for them to eat. She goes, can you just stay in here? Interesting request.
I mean, it makes sense to me.
Okay.
Like, she's one, like, touch starved. She has nothing and no one. Her own husband just tried to kill her. And she's been alone in a box where, like, she just had a panic attack and thought she was going to die down there.
Yeah.
Like, there's the trauma here of, like, I don't want to be alone right now. Makes sense to me.
I think that and this probably comes back to some more of my like people-pleasing tendency. Mm-hmm. I would want, well, I mean, I don't know what I would want in this actual situation, but in lesser traumatic events, I want that space where I can go and like lay on the floor of my shower and cry, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
If I'm going through something.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a long shower
mm-hmm.
and 5 minutes of that is washing my hair and my body. And the other maybe 30 is probably laying on the floor of the shower and crying.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, it's a nice place of solitude where like you don't need to feel like your feelings are a burden on anyone else.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
But that probably is something I should talk to my therapist about instead.
Yeah. Yep.
So he kind of stiffens because he's like, she wants me to be in here while she's naked in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
Man. She's like, I'm sorry. You don't need to. Oh, my God. I'm such a baby. And he's like, no, you're not. It's okay. I'll stay. Mm-hmm. It makes sense you wouldn't want to be alone. I was just worried you'd end up feeling uncomfortable with a strange man loitering out here. So then she's like, I know we haven't like seen each other since high school, but like even after you broke up with Maisie, she said good things.
Yeah, which is a huge green flag.
100%. You can have a relationship that doesn't go well and doesn't end well or mm-hmm. just ends and you can still say like, they're a great person. They just weren't my person.
Yeah. We've read a lot of novellas. We've read a lot of really long books, a lot of really short books. And it is impressive to me that you can create a very real feeling character.
Yep.
With a lot of depth and a lot of real experiences in such a short space, you know, of pages. Like, this was really, really well done. Like, Noah felt like a real character who was flawed in a realistic way. The other thing that it does, too, is give you the green flag of, like, they were both mature enough to talk about it mm-hmm. and, like, communicate about what they wanted and where they were going to get to that conclusion, however sad it might be. Like, all of this is just, like, enough showing, even though we are getting it told to us, but the details that are being told to us are nuanced enough that it shows you the kind of person that Noah is without it feeling like, oh, this is a lore dump.
Well, and it's also like all of that is in one paragraph.
Yeah.
So you get all of that information very briefly, but in enough of a way to get all of that extra information out of it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So Emma's like, she's like, well, that doesn't mean that I don't know you. And then mm-hmm. she's like, I'm not trying to hit on you. I just thought I was going to die alone down there. And now I'm worried that if I'm left alone again, I'll feel like I'm right back in that coffin, mm-hmm. which makes sense. And he's like, okay, I'll be right over here. I'll turn around. I'll give you some privacy. He like mm-hmm. gets the water all set for her. Then he goes into man mode and he's like, a few seconds later, the sound of shifting cloth hit my ears and I forced myself to tune it out, to not let myself imagine the sight of the most stunning woman I'd ever seen stripping naked behind me. No way in hell was I sexualizing this angel after what she'd been through. And this is another one of those, like, you're not responsible for your first thought, but you are responsible in the way that you react to that thought and the actions that come from it. So, like...
And he passes the test.
Absolutely.
She does not.
Nope. I mean, for now, he passes the test.
Yeah. I mean, you can only be expected to do so much.
So, he's thinking, like... Bo had found a way to get her, like, to get around the laws, to mm-hmm. get her buried alive, essentially.
Yeah.
And he's like, what would have happened if I wasn't there, if I hadn't worked late? Like, so she's like, okay, you're good for him to be able to not be facing the wall anymore. And she moans at the heat of the water.
Yes.
And the water pressure.
He's like, telling her the brand and where he'd purchased it, and then is trying not to think about the sound that she made.
Again, like, he's really trying to rein it in, and I can appreciate that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so he goes into what I would call true crime podcast listener mode.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is, starting to think about motive. Mm-hmm. And he asks if she and Bo had life insurance policies for each other. And she said, no, we had a joint one. And then Bo had a separate policy for himself. I'm not worth anything. So there was no need to get one for me, which Noah does not like.
Nope. Which also doesn't make any sense.
No, that's
because not your life insurance policy doesn't have anything to do with your like net worth or whatever.
It has everything to do with making sure that your family is set up to take care of the expenses of your death.
Yeah.
He continues, I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts and you start to notice patterns after a while. There's a small percentage of men who both cheat and rack up debt that decide the best way out of their self-inflicted problems is to take out a huge life insurance policy on their partner and then kill them. These men are usually controlling, obsessed with appearances, and don't believe in divorce. Sound familiar?
Crazy.
I mean, he's right.
He's right.
This is correct.
But also, like, how does that still happen?
I feel
like there has to be some level of investigation that goes into that.
Well, and the thing is that, like, this is less and less true as society becomes more and more
aware.
I think like aware is one way of putting it, but also like in the same way that like the DHS can't really lie or can try to lie about what happened to Renee Good and Alex Pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen the evidence with our own eyes.
Yeah.
Like, there's more access to information now than there has ever been. And so, like, people are less and less likely to just be like, ah, what a strange coincidence. This man is a widower three times over. How unlucky for him. But these days, it's just like people aren't really willing to let. I don't know. I do feel like it has something to do with access to law enforcement, access to like public opinion. Like it's easier to get eyes on a case like this. Like if you're the sister of someone who died under like mysterious circumstances or a family member or whatever, like it's easier for you to post online and be like, hey, this is shady as fuck. And then you get like a bunch of people like calling in your local police department and it generates a lot more investigation than I think we would have originally seen. My parents always have like Oxygen True Crime running in their house. And like all of the cases are like from the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, like there's so little now from the modern era because people aren't like keeping their heads down and like not talking about it the way they did in previous generations, I think.
Well, and then now it ends up being something that like is a documentary. So, but also it's not like super easy to get a life insurance policy, by the way. There's some that you can, like some employers will like, okay, here's a $50,000 life insurance policy. But to get like a huge life insurance policy, you need to have... doctor's appointments and medical records and blood work drawn and all of that. That's not something that like he could forge her signature, which we find out happened.
Yeah. And just be like,
yeah. So,
and given like their lifestyle, I don't think that even like a $250,000 life insurance policy would solve all of his problems.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
So she's like thinking about it. And she's like, I'm seriously going to kill him, Noah. And he goes, trust me, I understand the urge, but then you go to jail. Wouldn't it be better to put him behind bars instead?
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, we're going to do this the right way. We're going to break into my home.
The right way is an interesting way to put this.
No, if we try to do it the right way and tell the cops.
Yes.
His brother would give him a heads up and then we wouldn't be able to find any evidence. So she's like, we're going to do it. The better way.
Yeah.
We're going to break into my home and we're going to find the evidence. And then he's like, someone should kill him for the way he treated you. And she says very quietly, it wasn't always so bad. And he's like, oh, no, you don't understand. I'm not blaming you for staying.
Yeah.
You don't need to try to defend yourself, which this is a very emotionally mature man.
Yes.
So she finishes her shower and she's like, do you have any clothes for me to wear? So he grabs her some sweats, a t-shirt, a big cable knit sweater. Mm-hmm. And then we get the
information.
We get the information that he is 6'4". And immediately I was like, standard romance main character.
I have it highlighted.
I do too.
I do.
It's
because
always,
it's just like, always it's so funny because I didn't notice it until you mentioned it. And now it's like, if we get a stated height,
it's 6'4".
Always 6'4". Uh-huh. Makes me want to write a series of short king novels just for funsies.
I love that for you, but no, not for me. Give me that 6'3", 6'4", 6'5".
I want to be able to look a man in the eye.
I want him to put his chin on my head.
This is why I love chatting with you because we come from such different perspectives.
Also, we can come from such different perspectives, but still find common ground.
Yeah.
And still be such good friends.
Yeah.
Take note, America.
Also, take note that when we talk about finding common ground, we mean differences in attraction to men, not whether or not humans deserve to live and exercise their First Amendment rights.
We've always been on the same foot on that side of things. So there's that.
Yeah.
But she says, I'll change into these while you shower, and starts to kind of follow him into the bathroom.
Yeah, it's just like a little puppy.
Wait, then he thinks, okay, fine. She's going to give me the same modicum of privacy that I gave her.
Uh-huh.
And he takes his shirt off. And as he kind of peeks over his shoulder, he realizes that that was not the case. And she's
staring at him.
Which, love it. I love that for her. And she can blame the trauma on it all she wants.
Sure. I loved this so much. It's so good.
So it says, she was ogling me, her cheeks pink, eyes wide, mouth open as her gaze drank me in. My dick twitched. And he thinks, don't you fucking dare.
to his
penis.
Dick.
And she goes, I like your tattoo.
I loved it. And he thinks, in any other moment, I wouldn't have let a woman get away with such a blatant lie. I would have turned, pressed her back to the door, and tormented her with my fingers and my mouth until she confessed the truth. But that wasn't what this was between us. It couldn't be, so I made an exception. Thanks, I said.
I mean, pressed against the door.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Yeah.
So this is also a man with some emotional intelligence that it has the wherewithal to know the time and the place. But also, when it's the time, the place is up against the door.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yes. And you know what else I think I'm starting to realize is this in particular is a really good kind of look at why women really like romance, especially.
Okay.
Is there are a lot of indications here that she is into him.
Mm-hmm.
He is not assuming that she is into him. He is not like taking every single possible like avenue to be like, oh, she's so into me.
Yeah.
You know, like he's not forcing it. He's not forcing himself on her. Like, yes, a lot of this is circumstantial and like all of that. But I feel like so often in the real world, we run into situations where it's like, oh, she's a service worker, a waitress, works at a coffee shop, is being polite. Mm-hmm. And a man will be like, she's flirting with me. She wants me. And like, I feel like in romance,
those men also think that the strippers like them.
Yeah. Yes. Those ladies, they are too good for you.
Yeah. And you know what?
There's a reason you have to pay to see them.
And if they make you think that they like you, then they're doing their job well.
Yes. I don't know. I found Noah to be very compelling and a pinnacle that men could aspire to, not because he's 6'4" and hot, but because like he does all the right things and thinks the right things and does a good job of like emotionally regulating.
So he showers and he's like, I can understand why she had moaned when she got under the water. Like, this mm-hmm. does feel really good after a long day and then a little bit of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks her when he turns the water off, am I good to come out? And she says, yep. And he opens the curtain and she's just staring right at him again.
Yes.
She did not turn around.
No.
Now, I mean, I guess she's not really
in her right mind. Yeah.
So then she's like, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking if it was okay because I was dressed.
Right. If I was decent, because I was naked when you went into the shower and I was getting dressed out here. And he says at the same time, I'm sorry, I thought you were turned around. And this was so cute because she says, you must think I'm a pervert. And he goes, yes, which is funny. And she says, I'm so sorry. And he goes, not your fault. It was a miscommunication. Now are you turned around? And she goes, I am. And then like he comes out and he goes, you're all good. And she doesn't move. And he's like fully dressed now. And he goes, are you okay? And she goes, no, I've put myself in timeout. 3 minutes left.
I love this. This was so funny.
So cute.
It was really cute. I liked it. He laughed and then just kind of like went about with his normal routine of after he gets out of the shower.
Also, the man puts on a pair of gray sweatpants and a white Henley. Mm-hmm. She cannot be held responsible for her actions.
I mean, it is no wonder that despite the fact that she had just been buried alive, she
wants to climb that man like a tree. Yes.
And tall tree he is. See, you can't climb a short king like a tree.
Not with that attitude.
So he asks her if she's hungry. She's like starving. And he's like, well, you know what? You've been in a coma for a week. We probably should be careful with like
how much food you eat and how solid it is.
Which is wild for a man to think preemptively about a woman's tummy troubles.
Indeed. Because I love the meme going around that's like all hot girls have tummy troubles.
Yeah.
Because like, damn, if that ain't the truth.
Yeah. So he's like, I have leftover beef stew from last night. I could heat it up and put that in a blender. Mm-hmm. It's got everything you need. Low carbs, high protein, and nutrient dense. And she goes, a meat smoothie sounds delicious. Mm-hmm. It makes me want to gag. But also probably would just taste like beef broth, so like it would be fine.
Yeah. Well, this is what was funny to me is like everyone loves a bisque.
Yeah.
And a bisque is like a smoothie. So he pours it into ceramic tankards with straws.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you could have just put it in a bowl with a spoon and then it would have been less gross.
That's true. I mean, I didn't think about it in terms of a bisque. I was just thinking about it like I don't particularly like beef stew anyway.
Oh, I love beef stew.
I don't know why. He's like, I can make something else. She's like, no, I'm starting to get lightheaded. I do need to eat something. It's fine. Let's just do this.
Yep.
So he heats it up. He blends it. They try it. And she's like, you know, I'd even go so far as to say it's decent. And mm-hmm. He puts his on the counter and pushes up his sleeves, getting ready to clean the dishes. Emma's eyes dropped to my forearms and her cheeks pinked again. I glanced down, wondering what had caused the reaction. But it was just my forearms, maybe a little more vascular than normal because of, was that it? Was Emma a forearm girl? I flexed a little and she wrenched her gaze away.
As a forearm girl, mood.
He was flirting with his forearms.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
It's good. Obsessed.
So then he's like, oh, no. I need to get myself back on track. Don't do that. Mm.
Yep. And they reminisce a little bit about high school. She says, I remember, you know, you were always really nice. And she goes, I could have been nicer. I didn't do a good enough job standing up for other people like you always did. And so we kind of get the information that he was always bigger and stronger and was able to put himself between other kids and their bullies. And she goes, well, I admired you for it. I wish I would have said something back then, but I didn't. So I'm saying it now. Which, like, I like that.
Yeah, I did too. What? I mean, I feel like we all have some regrets about, like, our pasts. And that is such a nice compliment for someone to be able to say, like, you know, I really aspire to be how you were.
Yeah.
Not because you were the hottest or the richest or the coolest mm-hmm. or the most athletic, but because you are a kind human. Like, that's, it's nice.
It speaks highly of him.
So then they're like trying to figure out the sleeping arrangements.
Indeed. And she still doesn't want to be left alone.
No.
And so he says, you'll sleep in my bed. I will sleep on the floor in front of the door so that you know I'm there and that no one can get in without going through me, which is very sweet. Mm-hmm. They have a domestic moment of brushing their teeth together.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's the little intimacies that I think.
That makes me think of Bring It On. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Where they're brushing their teeth and like competing with how much toothpaste they're spitting out. That's what that made me think of. Yes.
Yep. Very, very
millennial of us.
Yeah.
They get up to his room and he's about to turn the light on and she realizes that she can see out the skylight and can see the comets. And she's like, oh, wait a minute. If they're about to meet, then that means it's Valentine's Day. And he's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she goes, he buried me on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Damn, he really hated me. And it's sad.
It is. But then Noah says, actually, he hates himself. Men like him can never face their own flaws. So you, with all your light and laughter and love, became the target of that self-hatred.
Which is, I mean, it's true.
It is.
And it's like a deep thought to come out of a smutty novella.
Oh, yeah.
When people, the way that people treat you is not necessarily always a reflection of you, but a reflection of them and how they feel about themselves and the world around them.
Yeah. And she says, why are you so wonderful? And Noah, continuing to be the fucking best, says, I'm not. I'm decent at best. The bar, as we've already established, is just in hell. Because, like, this is, he's correct. This is basic human decency, you know? And, like, she disagrees and says, no, you, Noah Evans, are my hero. You literally saved me tonight. Accept my praise, damn it. Which felt like something I would say. So she wants to watch the comets for a bit and asks him to come watch with her. So they lay next to each other in the bed. And this was also very funny because she says, can you? And then she goes, never mind, it's stupid. And he goes, say it anyway so I can make fun of you. And she goes, well, I'm definitely not now. And he goes, say it. I'm the youngest child. I can keep this up all night. Say it. It's funny.
It's great. And it spoke to me a little bit.
Oh my gosh. And she goes, I was going to ask you to hold me. And it says, I shut up. She dropped her head back, closing her eyes. Go ahead. Tell me how sad and desperate I am. And he goes, I would never. And so he pulls her into his arms. I slid an arm under her neck and rolled her into my side. Her legs slid between mine. My other hand snaked around her waist, pulling her close. She buried her face into my chest and dragged in a deep breath, a shudder running through her. As she exhaled, she relaxed farther into me, her body molding to mine like we were made to fit together.
It's very sweet.
Damn. Mm. It's so good.
Yeah.
And he thinks, I need to calm down. Traumatized, I remind myself. She's just been deeply traumatized. Her husband had tried to kill her. I dug her out of the ground. Yep, that did the trick. The threat of getting turned on disappeared in the face of my fury.
So I love the, like, I have a man that will fight for your honor. It's good.
Yeah.
So then she starts getting some wandering hands.
She which does.
I can relate to. She looks up at him a little bit and then he's like, Emma. And she goes, I'm being pervy again, aren't I? And then she apologizes and she's like, I almost died and you're Noah, you're so handsome and nice. And he goes, and you really like my tattoo. I love a callback. Like,
I do too. So it good.
Just, so she's like, she apologizes and he goes, don't be sorry. Death or near death does this to people. I've gotten hit on more at funerals than anywhere else. This is just your body's natural response, craving a way to feel alive instead, which is probably true.
Yeah.
And she goes, and it's probably worse for me than most since I haven't come in so long. Like, what?
Goddamn. Sure, let's throw that out there.
And he's like, not even like on your own? And she goes, no, yeah. I was so sick for so long. And Bo had opinions about my weight gain and it started to mess with my self-image. Mm-hmm. And then he growls. Mm-hmm. So he says, I meant what I said earlier. Bo should have been begging for it. Followed you around on his knees, just hoping you'd give him a taste. He should have spent night and day praying you'd spread those beautiful thighs for him. Now, this is a man that just, he has tried to hold off. Now, I can't decide if, like, has he set a boundary and she is crossing it and utilizing, like, trauma as a way to do that, or is he not really setting a boundary because he's never said to her really? So, like, are we okay with this? Because I don't think I'm okay with it in the time frame.
I hear you. I agree. I think, like, maybe this is the dark part of the dark romance.
Yeah,
is like, I think we're just kind of accepting the inappropriateness of this. There's enough here in the narrative to make it like explicitly okay in both directions, I think. Like, yeah. One, he is only trying to stop her out of concern for her.
Yes.
Like, I don't think he's setting a boundary. And then, so what, like, we get explicit communication about this.
Which,
like,
is great.
Which is great. He says, Emma, we can't. And she goes, oh, no, I'm so sorry. You're probably seeing someone, aren't you? And he goes, no, it's not that. And she goes, then what is it? And he goes, you literally just woke up from a coma? And she goes, is that all that's stopping you? And he nods and she goes, I'm fine. Please fuck me. And he goes, Emma, you're killing me. I'm trying to do the right thing here. You've just been through one of the most fucked up weeks I've ever even heard of. You need rest, recovery. I'm worried you're not in your right mind and I'd be taking advantage of you. So he communicates why.
Yes.
And then she, on her part, says, I feel more like myself than I have in years. Like I've woken up from a decade-long coma instead of a few days. My marriage has been over for a long time and I didn't want to admit it. Like, so we get enough here to absolve both parties of wrongdoing, I think.
Okay.
The problem is that at the end of the day, we're still people and we're like, this is too fast. Everything about this is wrong.
Yeah. I think that's all that it comes down to. But I mean, that happens in, like, you know, it is that adrenaline rush after something like that kind of situation. So, like,
this is bonded by trauma.
Yeah.
I don't, like, I'm not condoning. This isn't, they should have waited, for the record. If this were real life, they should have waited. But in terms of, like, narratively speaking, the pieces fit together, right? I think.
So she's also like saying she wasn't smart enough to go back to school. And he goes, you were valedictorian. And she goes, yeah, because the principal wanted to sleep with me. Or that's what Bo had always said.
Uh-huh. So this man just fucking chipped away at everything that made her her.
Yes.
Ugh. She says, that man belittled me, gaslit me, and manipulated me until I didn't even recognize myself anymore. It took him trying to kill me for me to remember who I really am. And the real me, she desperately wants to kiss you. She desperately wishes she could go back to high school and find the courage to say hi to you, to tell you she thought you were sweet and funny and so hot for always standing up for other people. And then he says, do you really mean that? It's so cute.
And she nods, running the pad of her thumb over my lower lip, and it was all over for me.
Mm-hmm.
So they kiss.
Yep. And she goes, she punches her hands in his shirt and says, please take this off. I want to look at you again. And he replies, I don't have any more tattoos.
Here's the thing, and I had seen this, I don't know where I saw it, but it was somewhere on social media, and it had said, if you're not laughing at some point during sex, you're having sex with the wrong person.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Like, and it's, I mean, it's not wrong.
I agree. I would say that, like, this smut really smuts.
Yes, like, I agree.
I thought it really, really worked. There's a lot of not just like communication, but like there is a lot of communication. There's a lot of validation. Mm-hmm. There's so much here that works. There are good sensations. Like what's interesting, especially, is like we've talked about getting sex from her perspective, right? Yeah. And we don't get that here. It is all from Noah's perspective.
Yeah.
And it still really, really worked.
Yes. And only once do we get the whole like milking, which we know I don't like. Neither of us do.
No.
But we also get like, she says, look at you. And he says, I'd rather look at you. Mm-hmm. And she says, I'm not. And he stops her with a kiss and says, if the rest of that sentence isn't highly complimentary to yourself, I don't want to hear it.
Yep.
Damn.
Yeah.
Like, he not only did he save her life that evening, but he's also reversing other traumas in the process of like, you're not going to talk badly about yourself.
Yep.
And it's good.
It is good. It is good. Everything about it is good. He goes down on her, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Like, we only get one reference to the fact that her taste is musky.
Oh, yeah, I have that, and I didn't like it either. I hate that word, musky.
I know.
But also, we get, sweet, musky, fucking delicious. And she's like, no, I don't, I can't. And he goes, you've never come like this.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't say anything.
But she is shaking her head. And he says, you can. And she goes, but what if I can't? And he says, then it's a good thing I'm still hungry because this pussy is my dessert and I'm going to take my time devouring it.
All great. But mm-hmm. then he gets this thought. A stray thought hit me like a bullet and my mood darkened. Because why did she think that? Because mm-hmm. she hadn't ever. Had Bo never gone down on her, or had he done the typical male thing of abandoning the task because it took longer than he wanted? And this sentence was so good, but also was like, oh, wait, that's right. The author is a woman.
Yeah. Yes. A condemnation of an entire gender in black and fucking white. So he makes her come with yep. his tongue.
Fantastic.
The other thing, too, is, like, I feel like the sex is realistic, too. Like,
yeah.
So he has her go down on her hands and knees because she wants to feel like she's being split in half, which, like.
Well, because he's got a giant delivers. Penis.
Yes. Of course he does. This is romance we're talking about.
That's true.
But he's worried about coming too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So he ensures that she comes again by using other appendages. He gets yep. his fingers involved. He touches her clit, like fucks her from the right angles.
Yep.
It's like, it's so good.
She says, God, you fill me up so good. And he says, my yeah. balls tightened to hear her say it. Pressure building at the base of my spine that told me I wasn't going to last long if she kept talking. Now, I mm-hmm. feel like I just heard, I feel like it was like the Smashcast podcast. And they yeah. were talking about how this comes up a bunch with like my balls tightened. And they were like,
yeah.
does that happen? Is that a thing? And this is coming from like two men.
Okay. If they're asking if it happens, I feel like
right?
maybe it doesn't.
Right? But also like, yeah. So I don't know. Again, one of those times that I wish we had like a male perspective to ask that, the TMI questions that we want to know the answers to.
We need to set up like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Like this is a phone a friend moment.
Phone a friend.
Yeah. So they each finish and tell each other happy Valentine's Day. And then she says, can we do that again? Which is funny.
She also said, he says, holy shit. She goes, I know. I feel like I just died and came back to life. So she's got as much of a dark sense of humor as he does, which is good.
Love
That's
it.
Important
yep.
to be on the same page with that.
Yeah. So now we're going to spend the rest of this book.
Yep.
Because we're on page 65.
Yeah.
There are 95 pages.
Yep.
and we are going to spend the rest of it breaking into her house looking for evidence. They get into the house. They go upstairs into the study, which is on the third floor. Mm-hmm. Then they hear a noise downstairs because they'd watched for Bo to leave yes. and go to his shift. But it appears he came back for some reason. And they're like trying to hide in yes. the hopes that he forgot something and is going to like come in and then leave again. But basically, they get into a guest bedroom on the third floor, and he pushes Emma towards the closet and tells her to hide. And he turns to shut the bedroom door to a narrow crack, right? Yeah. So it's dark in the room. There's some light in the hallway, and he wants to be able to watch the stairs. And then he hears someone coming up the stairs. And as he looks into the hallway, he sees a spot of darkness deeper than the rest rising into view on the staircase like something out of a horror movie. Bo. And from the longer, thinner shadow extended out in front of him, he was carrying a shotgun.
Which he thinks to himself, this man has tried to kill his wife now multiple times. Mm-hmm. And here he is now holding a gun. I need to protect her, whatever the cost. Mm-hmm. Now, lights are off. Mm-hmm. Bo's in the dark, and then he mm-hmm. whips around, and all of a sudden, the shotgun is pointing right at Noah. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see Noah. He doesn't realize he's there. So yeah. he goes into the study, office, whatever, yeah. and Noah sneaks out of the room he was hiding in and somehow finds a paperweight in the hallway. I stalk toward the office, snagging what looked like a paperweight off an end table in the hallway. It was heavy sure. in my hand, a little larger than a softball, but oblong and dense enough to do some real damage if wielded with force. Now, Bo comes out of the office. He tries to hit him with this thing. Mm-hmm. Bo ducks out of the way. Then we find out that, like, he was a high school wrestler. So, like, mm-hmm. he's good with this tussle.
Yep.
The shotgun goes off. Mm-hmm. Emma screams. He asks if she's okay. And then Bo goes, who else is in here? The fear in his voice making me think he'd recognized his wife's voice but couldn't believe it was her. So mm-hmm. the gun goes off two more times and he thinks to himself, like, good, this brand type, whatever.
Model shotgun.
That's the yeah. one. Yeah. This model of shotgun only holds three rounds.
Yeah.
And that means that he's done. Mm-hmm. So then they start fighting, like, physical fighting.
Yeah, just wrestling, essentially. And then Emma says stop and turns on the hall light. And Bo immediately goes into gaslight mode. Mm-hmm. And he sounds relieved to see her. He says, you're alive. Oh, thank God. And she's like, bro, you tried to kill me. Like, what the fuck? And because Noah's worried that Emma might fall for it. Mm-hmm. And she's not falling for it. And Bo says, I did everything in my power to save you. He goes, Emma, you've suffered a head wound. You must have had a nightmare when you were unconscious and dreamt all of that. And she's like, no. And I'm sure the cops will believe me once I get my blood work and hair tested and show them whatever else you've been doing to me. And she goes, oh, and let me guess, that was probably the same day you applied to cash in on whatever outrageous life insurance policy you took out on me to cover all of your debts. And he lunges at her.
Yes.
And slams her against the wall. Her head smacks and she goes limp. And I mean, like, Noah goes into a rage, but we're still going to, like, have another several pages of this tussle. Like, Emma manages to get back up. She whacks Bo over the head with a picture frame.
Yeah.
Bo ends up pulling another round out of his pocket and goes to load the gun again. And then finally, Emma gets a hold of the gun and swings it over the top of Noah's head as she yells, duck. It hits the side of Bo's head and he falls sideways and falls over the railing. Three stories.
Yeah.
And there's a very descriptive sound of yeah. what happens.
This is where it becomes the dark side of it. But, like, yep. this isn't the romance part. Like,
no.
is it the dark romance because they're, like, murdering someone together.
Maybe.
It's not like they're going to have sex at the top of the stairs over his dead body or something.
No. And we aren't going to, like, I don't know, we're not even going to, like, be shady about this and, like, disappear into the night and be like, eh, yeah, Beau's body was discovered days later. They call the police. They call the state police.
Yes, they call the state police and they tell them basically that, like, you can't get the town involved because they'll mess with your investigation, whatever.
Yeah.
So they go to a different hospital, not the hospital in town that his family owns. They go to a different hospital. The detective is very kind to them and he says that was quite the story. And Noah goes, please tell me you believe us. And he says, I do, because it's too fucking crazy for you to have made it up.
Fine. Sure. Why not?
And then we get, like, not an epilogue, but kind of an epilogue. It's
a year later.
Chapter, but it's a year later. Your favorite. Mm-hmm.
My favorite.
It is, again, Valentine's Day. And this is from Emma's perspective. And Emma comes in and she says, don't be mad. And before knowing what it is about, he responds, I'm furious.
Yeah.
I loved it. It's great.
I did too. Yep.
So she comes in. He's making beef stew. Cute, I guess. Romantic, but also like, ew. I just don't like
insert
it.
Whatever
insert
your comfort
whatever
meal is
yummy.
Here.
Yeah. Okay, fine. So she is surprising him with two kittens, which I knew that you would love all of this. And he's like, how many are in there? And she's like, there's two. And he heads up towards the stairs. She's like, where are you going? And he goes, 1 second. And he comes downstairs and he's also got two kittens.
Yep.
So now they have four kittens.
Yes. From the same litter.
Yes.
It sounds like. So they had both decided to surprise each other with two kittens from this litter that Gina Shaw had found on the side of the road and was having trouble finding homes for. And they decided to keep all of them. It was funny because he goes, I'm not taking mine back, but by all means, please feel free to be heartless and return yours.
Yeah.
And she goes, Noah. And he goes, kidding, obviously. So they keep all four kittens. They're talking about kind of the fallout of the scandal from a year ago. She eventually got her hands on the money from Beau's life insurance policy, which had just been enough to cover all of his debts, which she's responsible for, which is fucked because marriage, well, I guess.
Yeah. And that's what it all comes down to is that, like, those debts were...
They were a single tax entity, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But she had a little bit left over, so she's going back to school, which is exciting for her. They talk a little bit about, like, all of the news stories that had been run about them and how it went national and all of that.
We also get the information that he had been poisoning her with arsenic.
Yes.
Which had really messed up her whole system.
Yeah, her organs were damaged, which makes sense.
So Noah's helping her lining up all of her medications. And then he goes, I pissed on his grave today.
Yeah. Which is very funny. And she's like, come on. And he's like, I waited until there was no one around. Don't worry, whatever. They're being all lovey-dovey. And he says, you know, Emma Evans has a real nice ring to it. And she goes, it does, doesn't it? Mm-mm. He hands her a kitten and he clears his throat and shoots a pointed look at the kitten's collar. And she looks down and realizes that right next to his little tag is the most beautiful diamond ring I had ever seen.
So
too fast. At least they're not already married.
That's
but
true.
Too fast.
As you get older, I feel like it's not as much.
They're 32.
Oh, that's very specific. Did it say 32 in there? I don't
remember.
Yeah,
at the very beginning, it said that a freak accident had taken her life at 32 years old.
Okay.
And I'm assuming they were in the same grade, but I...
That, okay, fine. That's fair. But, I mean...
It's not like...
It's not like they're in their
50s.
Yeah. Listen, Elle, if you know, you know.
Okay. I maintain this is too fast.
That's fair. So he asks her, will you marry me, Emma Miller? I promise to treat you like the queen you are for as long as you let me. She says, yes, I will. And then we get thank you to whoever was watching us, to whoever had brought us together again, be it fate or the universe or those two star-crossed lovers who had brightened the night sky all those months ago. And that is where we end.
Indeed. What would you rate this one?
This one, I think, is like a 3.5 for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was well written. I liked it. It did not like grab me where I finished it in one sitting,
mm-hmm.
which like that's how I'm going to rate a 5-star. As if like if I finish this and I'm like, I devoured this. I didn't. I liked it, but I didn't devour mm-hmm. it. I think it's well written. I will probably read Lights Out at this point, even though like it's been a long time. I probably should have read it already. So it will, now that I've read, I know that I like her writing style. But yeah, 3.5 for me. What about you?
I think I'm also landing at 3.5.
Okay.
The writing is really, really good. And the smut is really, really good.
Yeah.
But I agree that it didn't quite grab me. And frankly, we spent so long on the violence at the end.
Yeah. I would have liked another sex scene in there instead of quite as much of that. Yeah.
Yes, I completely agree. But all that being said, it's my favorite time of the episode.
Yes. Almost.
How did you cast this one?
So for this one, for Emma, she is blonde.
Oh.
I went with Madeline Klein.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I feel like Madeline Klein can play a trauma story pretty well with like.
Yeah.
Outer Banks.
Sure.
Like that rescue mission kind of trauma story. So that was my
choice. Outer Banks is in the South somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. The Outer Banks.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like it's in one of the Carolinas. I don't know where they are. I know they're islands off of a Carolina, North Carolina, I think.
You're right. I'm not sure which Carolina it is either.
Ha.
So
anyway,
then for Noah.
Oh, of course.
I went with David Corn-Sweat. Oh, man. I don't know how this man was not a well-known name to me when I went searching for what I was picturing in my head. Because
he's Superman.
Damn.
Yeah. Very tall. Built like he could
dig a grave.
Yeah.
Yep. Also, like blue eyes. Full lips, like hair you want to stick your fingers in.
Yes.
Or run your fingers through. Maybe that was like, that was weird.
That's a better. Stick your fingers in is just a weird way to say.
But damn, that is one attractive man.
Could not agree more. These are excellent picks.
Excellent. Thank you. I feel like it had been a while since I had really gotten a good one in there. So have you done any reading lately outside of this?
It's kind of depressing, actually.
As is the state of the world. So
pretty much. So I'm listening to Injustice by Carol Lenig, I think is how you pronounce that, and Aaron C. Davis, How Politics and Fear Vanquished America's Justice Department. Yeah, it is not a light read, and it is about the investigation into the subversion of the Justice Department, culminating in Trump basically trying to steal the 2020 election. And it's just like really interesting and also really depressing. So
And timely.
Yeah. How about you? Are you reading anything outside of the podcast?
So I did just finish up Yellowface last week, which was really, really good. And you truly, truly hate the main character throughout the entire novel, which is speaks to how good the writing is. I really like that. I listened to the audiobook for that one. And while I was at that family book club to talk about that book, my cousin's daughter, who's 13, loves to read. I was like, girl, see me in 5 years and I will have all of the recommendations for you. But she did just finish the Cruel Prince series, which
Holly not, Black.
Not spicy YA-ish, no. Kind of, I guess, maybe new adult.
It's just fantasy. Yeah. I would still call it YA. Like, those are teenagers.
So she let me borrow her very, very annotated copies of it, which I love. And I can't wait to see if what I would like consider to be highlighted. And yeah. she had a lot. She's like, well, they're all written in. And I'm like, that's fine. I just want to read the books. Like, she devoured them in like a week and a half. So I'm excited to start those. And also, it's been a while since I've done like a physical book. So.
Yep.
So, yeah. So what are we reading next week?
Next week, since we are fully in the middle of at time of this release, Black History Month, we are going to be reading a Black author, Surrender, an erotic short by Rilzy Adams. This one looks fun. I love a single pact.
Yes. So do I. As always, if you've made it this far, we appreciate you. In the state of the world right now, we hope that we were able to bring a little joy and levity into your life, despite the fact that this was a dark romance about murder.
True.
But <Funny. laughs> if you are still here, don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review. And with that,
we're at our wit's end.
We'll see you next time.
Was that as good for you as it was for me? You have been listening to the What in the Smut podcast with Elle.